Now, if you heard Jonathan Mills earlier in the show talking about what makes any arts festival worth its salt, well, you'd have to say that as far as distinctiveness goes, the Darwin Festival has bucket loads. First of all, a lot of the festival happens outdoors in the warm tropical air, and a lot of the events highlight Darwin's proximity to both Southeast Asia and top-end Indigenous cultures. And all this comes into play with a huge artwork that's right now suspended and hovering above the bars and restaurants of Stokes Hill Wharf. It's the Thurungawa Helicopter Project. The artist is Alwyn Ray Emilio, who was born in the Philippines and now lives in Perth. The Thurungawa Helicopter is what Alwyn calls a social sculpture, and it's named after the place in North Queensland where it was created in collaboration with local people there. Alwyn Ray Emilio is describing this social sculpture to Michael Sheriffs.
It's basically a 4-meter helicopter sculpture that's made from a framework of bamboo and cane. It's a kind of a mix, a hybrid helicopter that's also sort of doubles like a large dragonfly, if you like. It's made from, as I said, an armature of bamboo and cane, and the main cabin is made from mud crab shells that were fused in clusters, and it's cable tied all around the cabin part. It has a bubble, a plastic acrylic bubble, which, you know, like old style helicopters have, and sitting inside this bubble is a projector, which sort of beams out footage, you know, around I think 30 minutes of footage of the making of the helicopter. So it's for this, it's always specific to where it's being installed. This is a third venue where we have exhibited this, and it's doing a kind of a tour of duty around the eastern coast.
And your helicopter is accompanied by other helicopters that have been made as part of a collaborative project?
Yes. When we first started the project, it was a sort of a process of making connections with local artists and the local community. And then it became a, you know, once we've identified our sort of primary collaborators, we started working on the main chopper. But along with the residency, there was a public program which involved all sorts of communities in Townsville, Thurungawa. So there was a school where we went, an Aboriginal school. A few primary schools were involved. English language class with migrants, recent refugees, and, you know, other migrant communities. Anybody would be interested. There's also a large, a sizable community from the Philippines living in Townsville. So, you know, all these people were sort of involved in shaping, you know, the final outcome of the installation.
Why helicopters?
The first helicopter that I was involved with was in 2002 when I was an art teacher at Karaili Adult Education Center. This is in a small Aboriginal sort of a language school in Fitzroy Crossing. It was my first exposure really to a remote community, and the work I was doing there was very much interested in the local sort of history. So in the process of talking to people, you know, I learned about the story of John Damara. John Damara was a kind of a folk hero in the 1890s, and he was believed to fly like a bird and disappear like a ghost. And I guess living in the Kimberley, you know, people are familiar with helicopters and because of the mustering, cattle mustering. And so I thought maybe we can connect it. If John Damara would be back, you know, in the 21st century, what form would he take? He who flies like a bird and disappear like a ghost, maybe he could come back as a helicopter pilot.
So it's important to you that these collaborations are specific to the location where the installation has been mounted?
Yes, it is. And so are the materials that I use are quite specific to, you know, what we find. We started with the crab shells in Townsville because, you know, being North Queensland, it's sort of mangrove country. And You know, so it's using all this. And there's also kind of maybe a reference of Townsville as a kind of a, you know, it's a military town and you have armors and, you know. But we're also interested in the idea of the two key ideas, actually, that I try to play in this project. You know, we use crabs because we have a negative concept about communities. When communities are disadvantaged, you know, you have the so-called crab mentality. There's also a positive, an inverse of that mentality, which is called the bayanihan, which means, you know, being one with the community and, you know, where you share and exchange labor and, you know, resources, you know.
So explain a bit more about the crab mentality. Why is that a negative idea?
When crabs are trapped in a basket or a container, you know, they tend to pull each other down. Those on top will be pulled down. I guess it is related in many ways with the Australian construct of the tall poppy syndrome. The bayanihan, on the other hand, is a sort of a traditional practice in rural Philippines where the community assists a particular family, for example, if they want to relocate their house. One calls for a bayanihan where everybody sort of help together and lift the house on their shoulders, literally lift them. Most of the houses in rural Philippines are made of bamboo, so the whole community takes the job of aiding this family and move the house. The women folk would bring the clothes, the kids would help. And at the end of the task, you know, they celebrate with a meal and all that.
So this is a very, very practical idea of collaboration. I mean, in Western terms, there's an American idea of a good old-fashioned barn raising where everyone pitches in and puts up you know, helps a neighbor. So it's the same thing. Yeah.
I think the practice occurs in rural places where, you know, people know each other. The more I think that we get urbanized, we get sort of alienated from each other. We build walls and...
Well, I was going to say this, you know, taking on the idea of a collaborative artist is a very deliberate philosophical choice. I mean, you are choosing to engage in a conversation with people. And in the process, as you were saying about communities, you're building up a shared history with other people too.
It is. It is. I guess it has something to do. It's only been recent that I've sort of realized there's something to do with the sort of growing up experience I had. I've been living in Australia for like 14 years now. And then the last 3 years, I went back home in the Philippines and did a project. You know, grounding myself back to my family's history and did a work about my father. He was a piano maker and he sort of started a small piano workshop, a family piano workshop. And I sort of realized that a lot of the things that I do now it's very much informed by that experience of him as a kind of a facilitator creating this creative space where people from different backgrounds, you know, a lot of the people who worked with him were, you know, didn't have much opportunities or education, you know, but they were trained, you know, as apprentices. And in a sense, you know, the company produced lots of beautiful instruments.
Well, this was known as the Grand Piano Project, wasn't it?
Yes.
Describe what you did.
Well, I was actually collecting stories about my father. He passed away more than 20 years ago. And I guess this started the whole idea of I'd like to make a piano, you know, about my father, you know. And the piano was a kind of a commemorative portrait. When I went back to the old factory, I saw remnant parts of the last piano project. It was a, you know, the cast iron frame. This is a grand piano, so a cast iron frame, a wooden back post, a third leg, and that was it. There was no templates because the company closed down in 97, and there was no resources. It was no electricity, no. But I said, this is a big challenge, but I'd like to do the work, you know, in this space.
So did you have to rebuild a piano out of your imagination, out of your memory?
I tracked down part of the former team of my father. And I said, you know, is it possible to build a piano without all these resources, you know, build a piano. It's a kind of involves an industrial process, and you need to have the infrastructure to do that.
So you weren't just trying to build an object that represented a piano, that looked like a piano. You were wanting one that would actually play, albeit, I mean, you put images on the lid. You had maps on the lid and on the sounding board, and you had a portrait of your father on the soundboard and a trumpet horn coming out of the lid, but you wanted a working instrument.
It was a functioning piano, and I worked with very skilled craftsmen who knew how to build one. So this is one good example of that Bayanihan concept. I told them, this is Bayanihan. I don't have the resources to build this, but once we start the project, I'll try to find ways and means on the ground, and we did. By August, we completed the piano. This was August 2007. We started around late January. And then by November, we shipped the piano to Fremantle Arts Center, where it was exhibited for a year. Well, exhibited at the gallery, and then we later loaned it to Culture, which is the Multicultural Arts of Western Australia, and lent it for a year so that, you know, local musicians or performers could use it. We did a series of concerts in Fremantle Arts Center. It's now part of the collection of the Singapore Art Museum, where it was shown last November.
That's one very well-traveled piano.
It is.
Well, we'll listen to some of the music that was recorded on that piano in Fremantle. But Elwyn Ramilio, thank you very much for joining us on Artworks, and good luck with the helicopter installation in Darwin.
Thank you, Michael.
The sound of the painted and decorated grand piano made in the old factory in Manila that tells the story of Elwyn Ramilio's father. And Elwyn's collaborative work, the Tharangawa Helicopter Project, is right now suspended above Stokes Hill Wharf for the Darwin Festival. And you can hear a longer version of that interview on the Artworks website. This is Radio National, abc.net.au/rn. Amanda Smith with you.